understanding of where we are in the galaxy.
Welcome to A Global Focus with guest Karis Brown Malloy, author, field researcher, and ICAR Virginia State Director. Karis has contributed to the field two books, Journal of a Starseed and Instruction of a Starseed. Karis also is a yoga and meditation teacher, healer, speaker, and holistic consultant. Everyone, Karis Brown Malloy, A Global Focus with website at aglobalfocus.com, airs live on the UFO Paranormal Radio Network with anchor station UPRN 105.7 FM, New Orleans. The several listening venues can be accessed at www.ufoparanormalradio.com. Happy birthday weekend to Joe Montaldo, the UPRN network owner and ICAR International Director who makes these broadcasts possible. This week's program features the work of author and researcher Karis Brown Malloy. Karis's writing capabilities were first discovered as a young student. Karis's contributions to the field include her books, Journal of a Starseed and Instruction of a Starseed. In addition, Karis is a yoga and meditation teacher, healer, speaker, and holistic consultant. She also serves as a Virginia State Director for ICAR, the International Community for Alien Research. Karis's spiritual awakening began while she was pursuing her Bachelor of Psychology degree. She received Reiki and shamanistic training throughout her undergraduate and graduate studies, emerging with a mastery in health and a master's degree in transpersonal psychology. Along the way, Karis gained unique and varied esoteric experience, which she writes about in her books. Karis's websites can be found at journalofastarseed.com and instructionofastarseed.com. Karis, thank you for joining us this evening. Your research and books are innovative and engaging.
Oh, thank you, Therese. It's wonderful to be here. I'm so glad to be able to talk to you, and I'm glad you enjoyed the books. They kind of just tumbled out, so it's all stuff that kind of happened. I don't really know how to explain it other than that. Unexpected, too.
Well, you know, Karis, your books are so helpful to those who are undergoing experiences. You note that when you first realized these experiences were occurring, like so many in the general public community who are experiencers, you had no reference point for these occurrences, and really, your book is a guide and definitely an informational resource for experiencers right now undergoing contact with ET. Thank you.
Oh, thank you for saying that. That's actually one of the things that finally got me to sit down and write the book and kind of come out of the closet, as they say, because I was meeting so many other people who cared and who there was no one in their life that believed them, and there was no one that understood them, obviously, because they didn't know any people personally who were going through this. So seeing how a lot of us are having similar experiences, and no, it doesn't make you crazy, and no, it doesn't make you a liar. I decided that, you know, by me coming out of the closet, even though I was terrified of what would happen when my friends and family were like, "You talk to aliens? What are you talking about?" But I realized that I had to do it because I knew enough and I'd done enough that I had to share what I knew in the best way that I could.
Excellent. And, you know, it is so important that the many experiencers around the world know that they are fellow experiencers and that there is an informational resource for them, such as your excellent books. And we're also thrilled you were selected as the Virginia State Director for ICAR, the International Community for Alien Research. Thank you, Karis. And you're also an admin for that great Cosmic U website. Thanks again. That's another wonderful site and endeavor.
Yes, it was. Cosmic U was definitely the thing that that made me realize that, no, I wasn't imagining this. And no, and it's a great forum for people to go on and speak to other like-minded people who have had not just the scary experiences, but really positive experiences and kind of get the gamut. Because if you look at the media. Usually when you're dealing with something that's an extraterrestrial experience, it's creepy or it's scary or it's dangerous, and that's just not the way it always is. I mean, it's unfamiliar and it'll freak you out just because you have been exposed to that media, but as soon as you realize that, wait a second, nothing bad is happening to me, I mean, for the helpful encounters, that is, then it's nicer to be able to get a more realistic view of what other people are experiencing rather than just what makes it through all of the gauntlets that normal publicity kind of stuff has to go through.
And, you know, Karis, I noted in your books that you're really an individual who rises to the challenge. And I think this is a very important trait. The person who just strives to achieve her goals is very much a trait of an experiencer. And You have excellent master's degrees. You're a great writer. I find your text very engaging, very helpful. And also, you know, it improves my vocabulary. It's really, they're wonderful reads. They're very informative. Now, you know, let me see here. Now, Karis, this is something I didn't know as well. Lots of information here. You note that at the end of adolescence, the beginning of young adulthood, that there is a key growth, a key point where there is a spurt in growth in the brain and the neural growth. And you heard this during your graduate studies in transpersonal psychology with the expansion of the brain's frontal lobe section and the neural connections on the brain. That's news to me. It's very intriguing.
Yes, a lot of people don't know about that. And I think it's strange that we don't know about that in our culture because we know about first of all, just a pretty much total growth spurt that goes on in the first year of life. And then there's a language growth spurt at about age 3, give or take. And parents of that age children will tell you, yeah, they learn new words every week, every day. It's amazing. And then there's a logic and math growth spurt that happens at about age 7 or so. And that's when kids all of a sudden can understand abstract concepts like math and things like that. And often that's when artistic ability grows a lot. And then we don't talk about it anymore. But the only thing you do hear is that the frontal lobes aren't finished developing until they're about 25, until a person is about 25. For women, it happens a little bit earlier than for men usually. But that's all we really hear. And the question is, what happens during a frontal lobe growth spurt? Because you've got all of the information in ancient texts about things like the third eye. And so if you've got your frontal lobes coming online, that's that part of the brain that runs toward the third eye. And it would make sense that that's when a spiritual awakening could happen. And that's also the age that a lot of cultures send off their youth to vision quests and, you know, coming of age ceremony, manhood and womanhood type stuff, because that's when a lot is going on a spiritual level in the brain. And, you know, without taking spirituality as just an empty belief, what is spirituality, and is it because we are now able to perceive a different level of reality than you were before the growth spurt? I think that's what happens often.
Boy, that's intriguing information. And, you know, on those vision quests here, we have a wonderful individual in the room. We, of course, there are so many of them are wonderful. They're experiencers, researchers, visitors, always have intriguing questions. And often our policeman here from the Northeast mentions the importance of vision quest. Oh, here he is. Now Cobb is noting that he's been on a vision quest in a circle for 4 days. Yes, very important. It sounds like a wonderful a path for transition there. Good for you, Cobb. Lots of information. And as well, and Charisse, again, your books, Journal of a Starseed and Instruction of a Starseed, are very informative, an excellent read as well. Now, I note that as an experiencer, you felt really a compulsion to read as much information as possible, to research these fields. I bet that continues to this day, does it?
Yes. I call them information binges. And I go on them every now and then. It ends up being, because usually we're raised learning at a slow, steady pace, a little bit every day, but I don't think it's realistic. I think that when you also think about spiritual practices like advice to follow your bliss and do what inspires you, then it makes sense that you would maybe learn a lot in a little amount of time and then put that down and kind of have the knowledge and then learn another huge amount of something else. And if you were to follow those things, then you'd end up having a ridiculously large amount of information in your head. But usually we're so distracted that we can't really, and that we don't really know what we would like to know. So what ended up happening was it was kind of uncontrollable, and I was luckily at a point in my life where I could do things like read for 4 hours a day and stuff like that, because my schedule just happened to be fluid enough at the time, but I also stayed up nights and stuff. I mean, I couldn't really control it, actually. It was kind of an obsession for a little while until, while I thought it was imaginary or ancient, when I thought that this was maybe something strange that I was imagining until I found enough other people, or I was just interested in things like ancient Vimanas and stories about flying ships and didn't realize that, okay, yeah, it's going on in full effect right now and didn't stop in the ancient texts. And then, of course, I realized I was contacting myself, and that sent it to a whole other level.
And also, I must note that your books note the confirmation of your different research findings, and you really have taken quite a path there in gathering information and knowledge, both for yourself and others. And this is interesting as well. I note a shared aspect of your experience, and that is when you really first came to realize something was occurring. Am I correct here? You were in another state and pursuing advanced degree studies, and that happened to me too.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Wow. So what happened? Like, how did your path change after that?
Well, you know, it's been interesting. I consider my friends at ICAR to be wonderful comrades here in this research. And also, I have other friends in related fields. But at this point, I'm doing a lot of key research on the tall whites. The tall whites have most impressed me because from Charles Hall's accounts as described in his series Millennial Hospitality, and also from reports from other researchers, as well as my own research experiences, also in conjunction with a fellow researcher here, they to me present as a possibility for a great neutral and very intriguing civilization, a full civilization in its own right, and with its own achievements, and willing to be reciprocal in both information and cultural exchanges of information, at least. So they're intriguing. But I still very much, well, for example, one thing, this is the only time I'll mention this tonight, I have had some scary experiences where I felt that using Christ's name helped. But now there, for example, with the talls and researching them, I really can't visualize a scenario there where I would be frightened. I'd just be intrigued, and I'd realize that it would be experienced with other. And other, of course, always entails something a little bit shocking to the system and really a new paradigm for the mind and the emotions.
Mm-hmm. And that's hard.
Yes.
A lot of us fight against it. I know I do. My mind gets very angry when a paradigm is being broken. And then after the break, I realize how silly the anger was. But while the break is happening, it's very real, and sometimes it's very scary.
And, you know, you need the confirmation, too, of people who are fellow researchers in the field. I know one reason that I've come so to love people at ICAR is there have been times when I've been particularly frightened, or others have particularly frightened me about the subject matter. And I was able to use, you know, their advice. It was very supportive, very helpful, because, and you're a fine example of this, Karis. Despite these experiences, you can still go on to achievement, and life is still worth living. And,
oh, absolutely. It's more complex in some ways, but I'm sure there are people living on Earth that have nothing to do with extraterrestrials and have incredibly complex and difficult lives because of their own things going on.
Mm-hmm. And you don't care. Go right ahead. I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's okay. You go. I don't even know what I was going to say now.
I'm sorry, and I'll promise not to interrupt. Sometimes that's kind of a lady trait of mine. But, you know, Karis, your experience of sensing a superior intellect one night driving home and glancing at the stars also was compelling to me. You mentioned the complexity and almost feeling of having encountered the I Am. That was a beautiful passage.
Thank you. Yes, it completely shocked me. It was when I didn't believe in any divine being. I was an atheist / agnostic, more going the atheism route, because I couldn't believe in a God, or either I figured that God was a sadist, because my thought was, well, if there's these horrible things going on in the world, and at that time I only believed in us getting one lifetime, And some people live to be 100 years old and rich and easy lives, and then some people die before age of 2 from AIDS and disease and starvation. Then how is someone who knows that that's happening and doesn't fix it anything that I want to have anything to do? So either it couldn't have been true, or I didn't want to give that any of my attention. So I just had a conversation about this with a friend who was very religious, and we ended up getting to the stalemate of, oh, well, it's just faith. And so whenever people would say, well, you just have to rely on faith, I would end the conversation. And even though I love my friend very much, I was like, okay, we're not going to get any farther than this tonight. So we ended up saying goodbye, and I was driving home. And I looked out the window at the stars, because they were so beautiful on that stretch of road. There's no artificial lighting, so you could see quite a few of them. And there was this presence in my mind. And this is in high school. This is before my spiritual awakening, way before, a couple of years before. And there was a huge, I mean, unfathomably huge, gigantic, all-loving, all-knowing presence in my mind. And even now that I'm used to my contact with who I call my contacts and my rhythm teacher and my guides and stuff, they didn't feel like that. They still don't feel like that. That was something different, something much bigger. And all this impacted information came in, but basically what the phrase was kind of an I am type thing. It was just kind of, I'm here, this is what I am. And I didn't know that the phrase was I am until years later when I came across the I am and all the ancient, someone discussing the I am, and I thought, oh my gosh, that's what happened to me. And after that came into my mind, I kind of replied, because it was too quick to be shocked. It happened all in a second. And I replied, okay, well, if you're real, then why D, E, and F, you know, all of the arguments I've been using. And the presence said to me something along the lines of, and it came in thought forms and understandings and not actual words that I can't quote, but something along the line of, just because you don't see this huge pattern that everything is, doesn't mean there isn't one. And there is one. It's just that you can't see it because, you know, my mind's not big enough. So that kind of shut me up. And it didn't necessarily totally change my mind, but it was kind of one of those things I couldn't explain away, and I couldn't pretend it didn't happen. So I kind of backed off at that point and allowed my mind to open a little bit from being so sure about my opinion, which was actually not very well informed because I hadn't done much research.
Well, you know, from your work, you strike me as someone who has a very, pardon me, great thirst for knowledge, and also to be one who is very open and objective as to researching the material. It's much to your credit. And pardon me, I know here too, Karis, that in your various studies, the concept of reincarnation was introduced. And the one thing that particularly intrigued me was that your feeling that, and realization that in one of your past lives, you had been a healer. And that during that incarnation, you witnessed so many suffering souls whom you were trying to help, but the sheer degree of suffering caused you to have less of a confidence in the power of good. And during this incarnation, one of the goals is to truly the power of good and of a loving creator. It's a great goal.
Yes, that's what I'm told. And it doesn't make it easy, because that means I have to be presented with situations that test that faith. So I have to be presented with these situations and then have the faith restored, which means that sometimes there's really challenging stuff that happens and stuff that doesn't seem to make any sense until afterwards.
Boy, well said.
Always, yeah.
No, it isn't, and well said. That's just what happened to me today. Good for you. And, you know, Karis, you have advanced training in several disciplines. You know, you were interested in Reiki. Now, just a shout-out here to our favorite UPRN chat room visitor on Pal Talk, Kevin, who's, like yourself, an expert in Reiki. He's helped many, including me, with my arthritis. And also, what I thought was really interesting, Karis, you helped your dad after he had been injured during martial arts. I guess his knee had been very badly injured. Apparently, his martial arts instructor was a little bit too demanding. And
it was an odd moment.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. It was an accident, but I don't know. It was one of those things where it probably shouldn't have happened. But ego might have gotten in the way of the right thing. So his ACL was torn.
Mm-hmm.
And my Reiki teacher knew about that when I first met her, and that was one of the things that made me realize that, okay, there's something happening here, and there's no way I can explain this away, so she knows something, and so I wanted to learn from her. And then after I was trained, my father came down to visit me, and this is months later, and I said, well, is it okay if I work on your knee? I mean, I loved giving Reiki then. It was kind of that obsession I was doing. It was my current information binge was Reiki and learning how to use it and learning how to kind of do the energy field stuff, which is really fun when you get to know how to do it for healing. And he let me. And as we were working, it was a new sensation of having kind of a clairsentience type thing. Like I could kind of see, and not in a visual way, but in a knowing way, the inner workings of his knee. And I didn't know anything about the anatomy of the human knee. But I could feel through sensing the energy currents running through that part of his body that the two edges of what used to be the ACL were kind of curled up like broken rubber bands on each side of where his knee was. And I didn't know where the ACL ran. I just said, okay, I feel something on this side and on this side. And he confirmed, yeah, that's where it's to the sides of the knee. So I could feel them there, and I kind of built a little scaffold in my mind. It just came to me at the moment as I was working. And I built a little scaffold of light and started to kind of wrap those torn ACL pieces around that and encourage them to grow across that scaffold. I mean, it took a while and a lot of concentration. And my father didn't know what I was doing. I wasn't telling him what I was actually, you know, imagining or anything. I was just kind of doing it. And at one point, he, who's a very skeptical person, says, "Karis," and he just kind of says my name like that. And I say, "Yes, what's going on?" He said, "What are you doing?" And I didn't want to tell him until he told me what he was experiencing. So I said, "What do you feel?" And he said, "I feel things moving inside of my knee." And after we had finished the treatment, because I figured, well, that was a good thing, you know, I guess, because it wasn't painful at all. He just was feeling things move around. And after we were done, I think he was visiting me for a week or so, so I probably worked on him a couple times. And then the next year, he went on a bicycle trip on a bicycle, not a motorbike or anything, from Virginia to Maine and across the country to Portland, Oregon. And he went up and down mountains and everything else, and he never had a problem with his knee again. And you shouldn't be able to do that with a torn ACL.
No, and I remember that your father was scheduled for surgery, and boy, that's a remarkable improvement. Also, you know, Karis, well, I wasn't really, now Kevin helped me with my arthritis, but I'm really not that familiar with Reiki, and you made some great points, that link between Reiki electricity and on electricity being a component of the human body signaling, as you mentioned, and that electricity could stimulate nerves and muscles and that impact of Reiki on energetic circulatory system. That sounds really wonderful. Sounds like a wonderful modality there for you, you know, for healing.
Yeah, it's nice. It's one of the many energy healing techniques there are. I mean, it's not the only one. It's the one that I know the best, but I don't even necessarily know that it's the best, and I think that there are a lot of really good ones. But it makes sense to think, because if someone were to get electrocuted or even a mild electric shock, you could see your muscles moving, and there are things like nerve damage that can come from too much electricity. So those are the meridians that run through the body that Asian medicine, Eastern medicine talks about. And if you have a physical injury, or even a lot of times an emotional injury or spiritual injury, that will be reflected in either blockages or kind of dead areas or more dead area body's electrical system, because if it can't get power, how can the cells do what they're supposed to do? So there's one way that you can heal an injury by attending to the physical body and by giving it, you know, whatever chemicals it needs in order to rebuild, like, I don't know, all of the things that people do with doctors and things. Or you can deal with the energetic part, and a lot of times both of those are good. I'm not at all advocating anyone to stop going to their doctor, you know, nothing like that. I'm just talking about in theoretical sense. And you can fix the energy currents, which will then fix the physical. It can kind of go either way. Same thing with mental issues, you know, since your brain controls the electromagnetic and electric currents going through your body, then if you have a problem in your brain with some type of emotional thing that has to do with a certain organ, it makes sense that organ might be malfunctioning. So if you fix the thought in your brain, you are also likely to fix the organ. Or if you fix the organ, you're also likely to fix the thought in your brain.
Well, that's excellent information. Thank you very much. You know, and I don't want to digress here because this is about my expert guest, Karis, who's on tonight. But, you know, Karis, with that explanation, I'm thinking now, I had a very bad fall back at the end of June, and most of the bones have recovered in my foot. There were several breaks. But even yesterday, I was walking around, and it hurt, and I was grumpy. So, boy, Reiki does sound good. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Reiki would probably be beneficial. I mean, for anything that's wrong, it would, and especially the foot. There are so many delicate bones and nerves and tendons and ligaments and everything in your foot. So that's a tough place, and it's also really psychologically connected to everything. And, you know, you hear reflexology, it's connected to every part of your body, so it'd probably be good to try out any healing modality that you had available to you to help.
Mm-hmm. That's a very good idea. Very, very good idea. Now, you know, two cares I found very intriguing. Your observations that one can see outside the normal light spectrum. I, too, have seen sometimes outside that spectrum, and I'm sure several of our room visitors and listeners of the program have as well. I still find that aspect of the vision upsetting. Do you find it, though, very helpful?
Both. It depends on what I'm seeing, really, and how I'm seeing it. I mean, I've definitely seen things that were scary, and I've definitely seen things that were unbelievably beautiful. So it's kind of runs the gamut. And I do know that a lot of people are experiencing, even since the new year, even just in the past couple weeks, are experiencing huge shifts in three perceptions, big kind of amp-ups and power-ups and being able to perceive things more clearly and more intensely than ever before. And that's, I'm no exception there. Some of my clairsentience and clairvoyance and things like that have gone up a lot. And sometimes it's disconcerting. You know, sometimes I see them and I'm like, whoa, what was that? What, that just happened the other day. I saw something that I wasn't expecting, and it was only a split second, but it frightened me, and I'm standing there because I didn't expect there to be anything there. And I'm standing there, and I had that moment of kind of recreating what just happened and saying, okay, is there any way I could have imagined that? Is there any way that could have been light doing something weird or, you know, a breeze or anything? But there wasn't. It was something else that was there. And I think your brain shuts out a lot of things automatically. Kind of like if you've lost your keys and you can't find them, and then they end up sitting on the table just where they had been, and your eye was just skipping over them. I think that it happens that if we've been told our entire lives that something's not real, then our brain just kind of camouflages it. I think that's true for lots of things, especially things like nature spirits and stuff that's there whether or not we see it, not necessarily stuff that's trying directly to interact with us, but things that that children can see and that some people can see, but that the average Western adult just can't see. I don't think it's that they can't see it. I think it's that they block it out or assume that they just imagine something.
Yes, that's very intriguing information. And, you know, Karis here, give a shout-out in the room to our hosts of Second Sight New York City Thursday evenings, Chris George and Stephanie Benetti. And the reason, too, I'm pointing them out is I know they'd find this information very intriguing. Karis, that being when your first Reiki instructor, now you are an expert at Reiki, but the very first time you were informed on that subject, what's her name? Susanna. Sorry, I have a note. Susanna, thank you. She gave you a beautiful citrine stone, which you have used in cleansing and for clarifying treatments. And I know at Second Sight, they often emphasize the importance of stones. And you still have your citrine with you. It sounds beautiful.
Yes, I'm holding it right now, actually. it's a small sphere, and it's a smoky citrine, and it's rutilated with, I think, gold. I mean, I've never had that confirmed because I would never let anyone chip into this thing to see. But it was the first crystal I ever bought, and I was at the store with my Reiki teacher at the New Age store where we met. And she was kind of explaining crystals to me, and she picked one up, and it was this one, and she held it. She says, oh, yes, this one needs to be with you. And she didn't work for the store. She wasn't selling it. You know, like, she had no reason to make me buy a random stone, this particular one, but she said even that I'd worked with it before, which I've wondered about since then. I thought, well, you know, it's probably thousands of years old. It has to be. It's this quartz stone, but to think that I've worked with this one before, it's pretty intense. But when I hold it, and I've seen this happen with other people too, it has gold filaments running through it that kind of do look like nerves or
yes,
blood veins or something.
Mm-hmm.
And you can kind of plug it in to your palm chakras if your palm chakras are open, and it will kind of clear out some of your energy circuits. I mean, I often get little chills and things, and I know someone whose entire arm kind of went numb, and I know someone else who had what felt like an electric shock go up her arm and then had an intense cleansing go on for the next 2 days or so. And I think that was like the first or second time I even met this woman, so she didn't know, you know, I mean, she knew a little bit about crystals, but I don't think she'd ever had an experience like that before. So this is a kind of intense thing, but it just kind of came to me, and I still don't really understand it, but I use it anyway.
No, that information really sounded fascinating. And now, Karis, you had referenced earlier the Celtic shaman, I wasn't correctly pronouncing that, the Celtic shaman tradition. You loved the world tree meditation exercise and some of the shaman concepts. Now, you also think you might have encountered what the Celts reported calling the shining ones during some of your meditations. Any comments on that? Sounds very intriguing.
Sure. Yeah, it was totally unexpected. It was one of those things that ended up being a confirmation later, because I was going through this book, and it's an excellent book. I don't know the author, although she's written a lot of really good books, but it's called By Oak, Ash, and Thorn. It's by DJ Conway, and I went through that book, and it provided lots of invaluable training in things like meditation. I wouldn't be able to meditate like I can now at all if I hadn't read that book and gone through the exercises. But one of the things that you do is kind of roam around in the Celtic underworld, which isn't the same as the Greek underworld, where disembodied spirits go after physical death. It's a different place. It's just kind of a different dimension in the Celtic version of the cosmology of the upper world and underworld. And one day I was doing a meditation, and I was walking through the underworld, and unexpectedly I rounded this corner, and there was this huge cauldron, I mean, the size of a large, maybe, jacuzzi or bathtub. I mean, big, big stone bowl. And on the other side of it was this really tall woman. And she looked to be, I mean, at least 12 feet tall, at least, probably taller than that. And the way she looked kept changing. First, she would have brunette hair, and then she'd have blonde hair, and her races, she was changing, and I couldn't really get a fix on exactly what she looked like, but I always knew that she was incredibly beautiful, and she was kind of glowing. And then I looked down at the cauldron again, which had been empty, and now it was filled with this golden liquid. And she put her thumb in the cauldron to gather up some of the liquid, and then put the liquid on my forehead. And as she placed her thumb against my forehead to get the golden liquid on to my skin, I catapulted out of my body, my consciousness, even out of the meditative body, you know, the imaginary one I had constructed to go to the underworld journey that I was on. But I catapulted out of that, and I was cosmically huge and seeing galaxies form and solar systems come together and things, you know, huge, huge cosmic types of and then I floated back down, you know, kind of like a feather, and eventually went back into my body. Now, I didn't expect any of that to happen. I didn't know what happened. I hadn't even read about the shining ones yet. But about two chapters later in the book, I got to a place that spoke about the shining ones, and it said, sometimes you may experience someone with a cauldron. And if they have liquid in the cauldron, interact with you with the liquid, it's a type of initiation. And I hadn't read that. I had not seen anything like that before. And that was one of those moments where I went, okay, this is real. And I did not imagine that. There's no way I could have thought that up on my own. And there it was in the book after it happened.
Boy, that's intriguing. And, you know, Karis, also in your research, you came across an interesting book also with meditation techniques. And I hope I'm correctly pronouncing this. It's Anam, A-N-A-M-Kara, C-A-R-A, Anam Kara Wisdom, Spiritual Guidance from Your Personal Celtic Angel. And the book was written by Donald McKinney. It seems as though you thought that was book was rather interesting, had some key information. But, you know, Kara's on this Anavkara aspect. You note in some of your visualizations there that you had seen, if I remember this correctly, a beautiful tall being with dark auburn wavy hair and magnificent blue eyes, and that AS, our French, also has seen that type of being. Do you think these beings really are ETs in disguise?
I do think that. Just because, well, first of all, AS has had so many experiences, and she's seen them in a few of her experiences. I saw mine in meditations I was doing, which you could say, okay, well, maybe I could have imagined that, or maybe I could have. But why would I have imagined an auburn-haired woman when I just expected a Celtic angel? Kind of, that's what the Anamkara thing is. It's kind of uh-huh. Celtic guardian angel to appear. I didn't know if it was going to be male and female. I didn't know, male or female. I didn't know what this being would look like, but she appeared to me, and she had long, wavy auburn hair and great big blue-purple kind of almost indigo eyes, and we would talk, and I assumed that she was maybe a part of my own unconscious that I let come up, or maybe an entity, because by then I was used to interacting with things like angels and spirit guides, and but I still was not aware of the extraterrestrial deal yet when I had these experiences. And later, I heard a Vass had made, and she was describing a being that looked just the same in one of her experiences. And it's not that it was necessarily the same woman at all, because there's apparently, I've heard other experiences discuss, a race of people who look like that. But the coincidence was intense enough that I froze when I heard those words. I mean, I was doing something else and listening to a video that she had recorded, and I absolutely froze and said, oh my gosh, I have to talk to this person, because I've had that experience, and I did. You know, I contacted her, and that's how I got to know her. So it definitely was real. I do think that they are extraterrestrials, and plus when you look at angels and the history of angelic interaction with humans, they're described like extraterrestrials. I mean, they come down from the sky. They often come in fiery chariots and weird-looking craft. They resembled various types of ETs that have been reported more recently, and they're not always physically described either, so we're not even sure always what they look like. But the one, sometimes when they are described, I mean, you have like Archangel Metatron, who is described as having a body made of light and a face that shines brighter than the sun. That to me sounds like a light being, you know. So it's just kind of going over this ancient stuff with new eyes when new information comes to light.
Thank you. That's very, very intriguing. And you know, Karis, I was remembering there as well that one of the beings that you believe you had seen on a craft, very interesting. We'll be discussing that perhaps the next or very shortly, because there are clear markers there in the literature of what experiencers do see and what does occur to them during these visits or encounters, though yours have been positive, you know, for the most part, or they certainly sound it, which is wonderful. I think that's great. I'm always happy for people when that is the case. But now you note, let me see here, that you also appreciate being able to access such information as Eric von Daniken's Chariot of the Gods, and how much you appreciate the work of Giorgio Tsoukalos.
Absolutely. Yeah, they're doing amazing things for the public awareness of this. And sometimes it's scary, you know, some of the information you see, but the truth is the world is scary sometimes and things that happen are scary sometimes, but they're doing a fabulous job of getting out information on what is actually going on, I think, or at least a better version than what we've had so far in mass media.
Absolutely. You know, Karis, your book with its details is just so, again, very helpful for experiencers, also their families and the general public, because this is a very valid subject matter, lots of important information. And, you know, Karis, I just have to note here, I had, even a couple of weeks ago, been mentioning this to my researcher here, the fact that many people feel that sometimes alien craft can be hidden behind clouds or within them. And you know that with your husband, and again, and I think your romance sounds so wonderful, the both of you are driving. Yeah, it does. It, you know, that gladdens my heart. It gladdens my old heart because it means that there are still wonderful events going on in the world. The universe is still a wonderful place. And, you know that you and Terry had your first encounter with a UFO while you were driving in the Midwest. Now, you noted you experienced dread at the sight of a crash. Me too. Also, you noted that odd formations, which first seemed to be clouds, but the craft was subsequently revealed its shape. Now, you kept yourself calm, but you were also advised, you thought, by them to keep calm.
Oh, yeah, I was told I better keep calm. It wasn't all that friendly. It wasn't all that unfriendly either. It was just very intense, which is how I've heard that other people experience them too, is just very intense and just very serious. And that's one of the reasons that seeing one can be scary, even if it's a friendly one, is just because they are so incredibly intense and present that seeing anything like that would shock, like you said, a shock to the system.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I was incredibly terrified. It looked like an anvil cloud. And I would advise anyone listening, especially those of you who are on the internet right now, to go and do an internet search for images of anvil clouds, and you'll see what I mean, because if you've never seen one, it's one of the most intense things. It filled up the entire section of sky in front of us. I was sleeping. I had just taken a shift driving because we were on a cross-country trip. And Terrence says to me, just as soon as I drift off, Karis, you better look at this. And, there's that gravity in the voice where I pop up and take off the T-shirt I'd been using over my face to block out the sun from my eyes. And there's this huge thing that's kind of got a rounded edge, almost like circular, but I mean, it was huge. You couldn't even almost see the back end. It just looked like a cloud formation, like a wall cloud coming in. But it was semicircular shaped like that, and the front of it was kind of rounded, even up and down, like it was like a disc type thing. And it was extremely low to the ground. I mean, maybe 12, maybe 20 tops stories up, really, really, really low. And underneath it was just darkness. The sun did not permeate that thing at all. And we were on a bunch of prairie, so it wasn't like there were trees or houses or anything to kind of block the weather patterns, I guess, coming through. So I felt like, I was very curious about what was under there, and I was also terrified. Just totally small, quiet panic attack on the inside, especially when we went under it, because there was a lip of cloud curving down, so you couldn't really see what was under there. You could just see that it was really dark. And we went under, and there's the scientist in me that's saying, okay, well, I'd like to see what the bottom of this thing looks like. Because this was my kind of awakening into the whole ET thing. This was before the information binges on the ancient Vimana. This was what got me there, because we're driving under this thing. And I had had shamanistic training, so I did know about using my consciousness. The whole ET thing, I mean, it's not that I didn't believe in them. I just hadn't had any experiences, or so I thought. So I just wasn't really into it. And we go underneath, and I'm looking up, and it was grays and browns, lots of different colors, and the clouds, because it did seem like a cloud, but the bottom of the cloud is, the only way I can think to describe it is kind of like the bottom of a jellyfish, like all those folds and curves and different patterns, and that's what it looked like. And then I'm real, really scared still, and I'm telling my husband that I feel like a mouse under a hawk. I mean, my heart was just thudding like crazy. And then I kind of sent my consciousness upward, questing upward to see what is up with it, because I just still thought it was a storm system. I didn't really realize that it was a craft. I just thought it was a really intense cloud, very angry storm. I didn't know. And so as I'm questing my consciousness upward in kind of a curious, I'm scared way, I realized that I'm being observed too from inside my own brain. That's the only way I can describe it. And I know it sounds very strange, but that's exactly what happened. And I realized that there was someone in my head watching me, just like I was trying to look for something by questing my consciousness upward. And the thing in my head, the voice in my head, and it wasn't a voice yet, it was just an awareness at this point that there was someone there who wasn't just me. And then the presence spoke. And what was said was something along the lines of, remain calm, so calm as you are, that's how calm we'll be. And I didn't know what .com looked like for them, whoever we was. I just knew that I'm under this gigantic thing that's scaring the crap out of me. So I'm thinking, oh, my gosh, am I going to get blasted with a bolt of lightning or something if I'm .com? And I was afraid, so I told my husband I was going to meditate. I reclined my chair. I slowed my breathing and slowed my heart rate and kind of put myself in a trance until we came out the other side of the cloud, which was probably 20 minutes later. It was huge. And during part of that, the winds got so strong that that it was hard to stay on the road anyway. So my husband had plenty to focus on, and we were driving by transfer trucks and things like that. They were also getting blown all over the road. And over, we stopped to get gas. And I went inside and asked the woman behind the counter, oh, my gosh, that was a really intense storm. Do you guys often get storms like that? And she just kind of looked back at me and said, oh, yeah, I guess. And it's so interesting how so often you can see something and someone right next to you does not see it because they don't really know what they're looking at. And they're not interested. It's not for everyone to necessarily know about the ET stuff. And it doesn't make it good or bad. It's just whoever happens to be interested and involved and who doesn't, you know.
Very powerful encounter. And, you know, Karis, you're so correct there. Also, for example, even in observing ET craft, when you do see the unusual movement of something that really isn't possible by today's aviation standards, it is remarkable. But yet you really, people's lives can have so many challenges or other aspects that they really don't have time to note the unusual sights in the sky. And what I thought was very intriguing was the fact that you noted on other instances that the very atmosphere seems a little bit changed before the craft appears. Very intriguing, very intriguing.
Yeah, something about how light the sky and how light permeates the clouds, it's hard to put a finger on. I can't even exactly say what it is. I just know that there's something strange about it, that it's not quite right. And I think that the reason that more people don't see things like UFOs is just because they don't look up very much. I know that that's a big thing in ICAR, too. A lot of times the ICAR people will say, well, more people look up, then more people will see things, because usually people look across where they're going or down. And so that's a huge part of it. But I really think, too, that that more are kind of showing themselves lately. So, I mean, I've gotten pictures of some cloud ships, and it's like, I never got these pictures before. I mean, I never took pictures of the sky really before either, so maybe they were always there. I don't really know. It's hard to say.
Very, very interesting. And, you know, Karis, I thank you for the fact that you mentioned in your book that you and your husband, Terry, were studying the Vimanas noted in the Vedic scriptures. And, gee, here I'd like to give a shout-out, if he's listening, to a friend of mine in Northern Virginia, a very bright fellow from Mumbai in India, who, when I mentioned the term Vimanas to him, immediately understood the term and was very, very intrigued. So, Karis, can you confirm tonight, as I've mentioned to him, that Vimanas are an important subject now in this field?
Oh, absolutely. And I'm not an expert on Vimanas. So there's a lot out there that I don't know. But, I mean, there's stories of flying ships, and a lot of times they're circular. And there are plans, at least the little bit of research I've done on them, say, I mean, compared to what could be done, say that there are diagrams drawn up and plans of how they work and layouts of what was in them and what level was used for what and what was the kind of the control area and what was the cargo area and the fuel area. I mean, that's not some random holy vision. I don't think so. I mean, it doesn't make sense as one, but that's kind of what they were relegated to because we didn't understand the technology. And now that we're kind of talking about that again, they're rising up again.
Thank you. That's very, very intriguing. And, well, you know, Karis, too, your books suggest that you're a very caring individual, very thoughtful. And I note that you mentioned the importance of a book you read. That was Many Lives, Many Masters by Dr. Weiss. I forget his first name. But you also...
Thank you.
And now you have... you believe now that perhaps one of the very first incarnations here was as an extraterrestrial among a race of crystal people. Really fascinated me that this group at that time was trying to make sure that the Earth's stability was maintained through use of crystals and, I guess, advanced technology. That was very interesting.
It was shocking to me, too. I mean, it was kind of a several-year-long arc that started when my Reiki teacher told me, as she did a past life reading on me, my very first past life reading ever, when I had only just believed I believed in past lives at all. And she told me that I wasn't originally from here and that I was originally from somewhere in the Pleiades. And the funny thing is, all of us, I think, are obviously from somewhere else. And there are lots of different places that people come from. I mean, our race and also our souls. It doesn't make sense to think that all of us would always incarnate on one planet, because there's no sense up in the universe, you know, especially when you're talking about things like consciousness. So a lot of people are star-seeded. A big amount of people are star-seeded. And I also think that not all of us are multiple races. So according to my Reiki teacher, originally came from the Pleiades. There's probably a lot of other stuff going on in the DNA, too. But she told me that I was originally from the Pleiades, that I had lived most of my lifetimes as one of a race of people that had she just said kind of dusky blue skin and looked pretty human, except for the skin, and they were very tall and lean and very kind of gentle-natured, and worked with crystals. And the title she gave them was the Crystal People. And at the time, that was before I was interested in extraterrestrials. Sure, I thought it was interesting, and I didn't disbelieve, because I was like, well, yeah, sure, it makes sense that there's been life all over the universe. And I figured it was thousands of years ago, or at least hundreds. And so I didn't really think about it. I kind of stored it away. And then about, 7 years later, and lots of experiences later, and just after my contact stuff is really starting in earnest, I went to a workshop put on by Brian Rice, and he led the whole auditorium in several regressions to past lives. And on all the regressions except for this one, I think he led 3 regressions that day, and sometimes you would look at more than one life in each regression. So there were a lot of different lifetimes you looked at. There was one in particular where I was blue, and I was living under Mount Shasta in a great big cave full of all these crystals. And what I did was, and at the time I didn't really know anything about Mount Shasta either. But what I did was like any kind of place you would caretake. And the crystals were very alive, and they communicated with the planet, because we saw the planet as a living being, of course. And so we were working in concert with her, helping her to do something. I say we because I was one of many that were stationed all over the planet in these kind of control room type things, where it's not like we controlled things, but we helped maintain a frequency that was beneficial for the planet. And I remember being there and walking around all these crystals, and then he asked us to go to one of the most intense experiences of the lifetime. And I was up on the surface of the land in a forest, and I knew that I didn't usually come up to the surface. Sometimes at night I would, but I remember that incarnation, the sun had been pretty bright, and I didn't really like it. So I spent most of my time underground in the huge rooms that I lived in and worked in. And as I'm standing outside and it's nighttime, I'm seeing all these craft slowly lift off and then go up into the sky, and I'm saying goodbye. And I was sad, but I also didn't really mind, because I was so zenned out that lifetime, and because I also knew that telepathic communication was normal no matter how far someone was. So it's not like I was not going to see people again, even though I wasn't going to see them physically, because I was being left there to do something. And I was saying goodbye to my family and friends who were leaving, who had kind of dropped me off along with others, and were going. And so after I left that lifetime and came back, you know, out of the regression, it took me about maybe 2 months, maybe 3 or 4 even, before I remembered that my Reiki teacher, Susanna, had told me that I was one of the race that she called the Crystal People, that I had blue skin, and that I had come from a different star system. And I put those two together. I remember I was standing in the shower when I remembered that, and it came on me like a thunderbolt, and I almost fell. I stood frozen for quite a few seconds, just with the intensity of realizing that the two had connected, and that I had totally forgotten about Susanna ever telling me that. And then I remembered so many details of it.
That would be a starling correlation, and that's really a beautiful account. Now, this would be off on a tangent, but it regards Mount Shasta. Karis, there's a lovely couple who I and my friend often encounter at these conferences, and this lovely lady, I'm older, she's a little bit older than I am, and she has said to me, at least on one occasion, that she believes that there are people living underground in the Mount Shasta area. I think she doesn't think they're quite human. And, you know, in this particular account, it sounded as though your group had left the surface. But Mount Shasta it remains an enigma. It really does. And this lady, you know, is very knowledgeable as well, like yourself, and I'm really giving it very serious thought. She said she's going to send me some links to different people who have been doing research that she finds on Mount Shasta.
Now, I would love to see those, too.
Me, too.
Show those to me when you get them, because I love to read that myself.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I did drive over Mount Shasta one time, and I didn't know anything about Mount Shasta. This was a couple months before that regression. Mm-hmm. And I was driving from Portland down to Los Angeles, and I didn't know that I was even going to pass Mount Shasta. I'd heard about it a couple of times. It wasn't really on my radar. And Mount Shasta, for those of you who have not seen it or don't know about it, it's this gigantic mountain that goes up into the sky, up into the clouds, on a completely flat area of land. It's not in a mountain range. It's this huge mountain that's just in the middle of all this flat land. So you see it from miles away. There might be one or two other small mountains by it, but it's not like you're in the Rockies or the Blue Ridge or something. So you see it from miles away, and it's just this behemoth thing on the plane, and it's really intense. And I'm driving closer and closer to it, and Terrence was in the car with me, and he was sleeping, so I didn't wake him up, but I kind of wanted to, but I didn't think he would have the same experience as I was. But the road that we were on, the highway, actually goes over the mountain, and while we were on the mountain, I was having intense emerges so strong that I was on the verge of these really intense tears the entire time I was driving over the mountain, and I had absolutely no idea why. Absolutely no idea. Later I did research and saw all the connections between extraterrestrial stuff and Mount Shasta. But when it happened, I didn't. And then that was in about July of 2009. And then in January of 2010 is when I had the memory at Mount Shasta. So those two were not connected until I had already been there and felt that emotion. And then I had the regression.
And that would have been a confirmation of it. Boy, that's a wonderful account. Thank you. Now, Karis, we are at one past the hour. Everyone here is really appreciating this conversation. We do have to take about an 8-minute break, but then we'll be directly back to this, what I'm finding, fascinating conversation. And in the interim, Karis's great websites are journalofastarseed.com and instructionofastarseed.com. Excellent sites. We'll be right back, everyone. Thank you.
Paranormal Radio Network. JCOM is watching.
Hi, this is Rob Simone, and I want to tell you about my brand new show here on the Paranormal Radio Network. Each week, I bring you the most interesting people on the planet, the most in-depth discussions, and the most controversial issues. We go where no talk show dares to go. Join me every week for the Rob Simone Talk Show here on the UFO Paranormal Radio Network.
Hey, hi there. Got your attention? I'm Gia Scott, and I was curious what you were doing from 7 to 9 p.m. Central Time on Tuesdays. See, I host this really interesting little radio program that airs live then, and we bring in all sorts of guests. Authors, experiencers, and everything in between. It's paranormal and guaranteed to make you go, My guest list is always up at www.giascott.com, and do tune in to the Dawn of Shades from 7 to 9 p.m. on Tuesdays.
Light up your night with the Kevin Smith Show. Hi, this is Kevin Smith. Join me Monday through Friday right here on the Paranormal Radio Network.
Hello everyone, Trish Sheridan, host of A Global Focus. Come join us each Friday evening at A Global Focus's new time, 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern. Come join the discussion.
Yeah, real funny, Benetti, but then again, being my girlfriend, you would know. Together, we are Second Sight NYC, a parapsychic radio show based out of New York City.
Join us each week as we journey into the unknown. Let's cross the threshold of reality together.
We take a fun and no-nonsense approach to our show, and we love to interact with our audience. Each week, you can expect a great guest, interesting comments, and strong opinions by myself and Stephanie.
As well as rapid readings, psychic dream interpretations, and the gemstone of the week. And don't ask us a question that you don't want an answer to.
Give us 2 hours of your time to inform, enlighten, and entertain you. Let the journey begin.
Join us.
Tune in to UFO Undercover. Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern with your host, Joe Montaldo, right here on the Paranormal Radio Network.
A Global Focus with guest Karis Brown Malloy, author, field researcher, and ICAR Virginia State Director. Karis has contributed to the field 2 books, Journal of a Starseed and Instruction of a Starseed. Karis also is a yoga and meditation teacher, healer, speaker, and holistic consultant. Welcome back, everyone, to A Global Focus with this evening's excellent guest, Karis Brown Malloy. And again, the websites for Karis are journalofastarseed.com and instructionofastarseed.com. At this point in the show, I'd like to just quickly suggest to our audience the other excellent programs on the network, including UFO Undercover with host Joe Montaldo on Wednesday evenings from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern. Also, shout out this weekend is Joe's birthday again. And Second Sight, New York City with hosts Chris George and Stephanie Benetti on Thursdays from 8 to 10 p.m. 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, excellent program, and of course Through the Keyhole with host Karen Dolan, fine show on Fridays from 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern. A great lineup there on the network, and boy, I always try to live up to the high standards of particular programs. They really disseminate a lot of very interesting information. Now, Karis, let's get back to this very informative discussion we're having. Karis, am I correct here that you believe that many of the beings who you considered to be guardians actually turned out to be extraterrestrials? And I'd actually like to discuss here. What will be your response to that? Welcome back, Karis, the second hour.
Thank you. Well, it was disconcerting. And it was just shocking, and it wasn't necessarily all of them, because there's so much that happens in this world and in this universe that, of course, the answer to every single thing is not extraterrestrial. I mean, there's stuff that's definitely other than that even. But what happened was I had been introduced to a new guide of mine from an intuitive friend, because when we intuitives get together, part of it is just talking about shoes and movies and whatever, and then there's part of the conversation where you kind of give each other mini readings, and you know how that goes. I mean, it's kind of what it's like when people who have that type of awareness hang out together. You're going to talk about that just like you talk about anything. And so we were sitting there one day on the couch, and we were kind of doing that and giving each other little mini readings as part of our just afternoon conversation. And she said, well, it looks like you have a new guide, and he's going to teach you rhythms, but not drum rhythms. He's going to teach you like rhythms of the universe and rhythms of the cosmos. And she described a rune that was his title, sort of, or just that I could imagine it and that would make it easier to connect with him. So I thought, okay, well, that's cool, you know, I'll do that. And so I started meditating. When I would meditate each morning, that's one of the things I would do while I was meditating, was kind of imagine that room so I could connect with him. And he would teach me stuff about energy flow and about rhythm and about how your breath is your rhythm, and we each have these unique rhythms that we put out, which is really the same as vibration or frequency or resonance, however you've heard it or are most familiar with the concept. It's all the same stuff. But how our breath is our rhythm, and if you want to affect your rhythm, you change your breathing and slow your breathing down, and how energy flows around any given space at all times, kind of like water flowing. And so if you're in a room, your energy is affecting everyone else's, because as the pure energy of the room flows around, it kind of makes an imprint of you as it passes you, then carries you around to everyone else in the room. And if you're aware of that, then your effect on the energy in the room and then on everyone and everything in that room is amplified. And then if you have beneficial intentions for what your energy will do to everything else, then it's amplified even more. Certain easy things that we can do, for instance, if you stand with better posture, that means that your energy circuits in your body will be more open and online, and your own bodily and spiritual energy will be able to flow, so therefore it'll be healthier, and so it'll affect everyone better. Also, your breath, if you breathe steadily and you're oxygenating your body, so you're giving your electrical system enough energy, then it'll also beneficially affect everyone else, and also the intention to beneficially affect anything that your energy happens to touch will do that as well. So little things like that he was teaching me, and I guess that's not that little, but even still, it was just little lessons every morning in meditation. And then I was actually talking to AS one day, because when I was one of the administrators for Cosmic View, which is her website, we would talk on the phone a lot, and she said to me, well, you know, when I was telling her about this rhythm teacher guide, which is what I called him. Well, you know, a lot of times when we have spirit guides or when people teach us things in dreams or in meditations, they're often extraterrestrials talking to us. And I go, oh, yeah, I know. I did know, and I had heard that, but I hadn't really thought about it in context with what I was experiencing. And as soon as I even allowed the question to come into my mind, because first I wrote it off, you know, it's like, oh, yeah, I knew that. And then I'm like, wait a second. Could it possibly be? And as soon as I asked the question, as soon as I allowed the question to come into my mind, I felt this intense, impossible to ignore, visceral, like bodily, yes, course through my entire system. And so I was shocked, of course, and I said, well, okay. But I had already had enough experience with this entity or this person to know that it was nothing to be afraid of, and to know that I liked him, you know, and that he was friend, not foe, not anything to be scared of, and not anything that was going to do me any harm. So that made it very safe and comfortable and okay, you know, to find that out. It's not quite the same as some people's experiences with, you know, waking up in the middle of the night and having ET standing next to your bed. It wasn't like that, which, you know, has happened too, but luckily that wasn't the first thing that happened to kind of open me up to this stuff. So.
That's very intriguing information. You know, Karis, I am very happy for you that you're one of those individuals, one of those experiences who've had experiences that seem to be majorly positive, and I think that's great for you. I wish I could say the same, but still, I think that's great for you. And again, I find some groups very, very intriguing as Petal Whites. And actually, now your guardian here, who demonstrates you the rhythm of the life, of your life and the cosmos. This gray sounds very intriguing. I was actually, too, that image of the importance of energy patterns, visualized rather as energy ribbons, sounds very interesting, and the impact of a person's presence and intention in the physical environment surrounding him and also among those present. Now, Karis, do I remember correctly, you also met this, you've met the same individual, the same instructor, and now I believe you said he now terms himself the assistant, sort of in your knowledge path, on a ship, a very large ship, alien ship.
Yes, I have seen him on ship before when I've been mm-hmm. there. I, as far as I can remember, and I'm completely aware that I've probably had way more experiences than I'm kind of allowed to remember, whether or not someone else has affected that change in my recollection or whether I've screened myself out, and I know that both happen. So I know that probably a lot more has happened than what I do have in my memory. But that said, I have been astrally or energetically on the same ship quite a few times.
Mm-hmm.
And the first time I was there, it was kind of a scary experience, not because anything was happening, but because it was unfamiliar and I felt like I was kind of sneaking around. And it's a long story. I thought it was a dream at the time, even though I felt myself descend back into my body afterward, but I was kind of in a sleepy, hazy place, so I didn't question it. But one of the times I was there, he greeted me, because after a while I got used to going, and it's not that I could control going, I couldn't choose to go, but when I did go, when I was invited, I guess, I was okay with it. It wasn't me. And so one day I went in the same place where I always went when I first got there, which was a certain area in this meeting of a hallway, and someone walked up to me who was someone I recognized, who was a male who looked the human, you know, on the ship. And then my rhythm teacher, he's not one of the tall whites, but he has kind of tan-colored skin, not gray skin. But other than that, his features are very similar to that of the classic gray, the large eyes and this pretty much non-existent nose and little mouth and long, thin arms and legs. He walked up to me, too, and I was shocked to see him. I didn't realize he was on the ship with these guys, but he was, and so I greeted him. And other times where I've spoken with him in meditation, I'll see him on the ship, and I'll kind of be there in kind of a halfway kind of way, which is hard to describe, but it's almost as if part of my consciousness is kind of uploaded into that environment so I can look around. A lot of times I can't. A lot of times it's just like having a phone conversation, and I can't see him or where he is or what the features of the room are like. But I have gotten some confirmation. One of them was this one day I am seeing a room with him as we're talking, and I noticed that behind him the walls and floor, which are white, but not like the stark hospital white, just kind of like clean, bare white. I know that sounds strange, but and not out of a material like what we have here, something else. But I saw that there was no sharp corner, like the wall kind of curved into the floor. And I noticed that and kind of had inquisitive thought about it, and he made a joke about how cleaning was easier that way. And so little things like that. And then later I read that a lot of times people will see curved corners, you know, and not straight corners like we have in many of our buildings here. So it's those are those nice confirmations that serve to show that, you know, my sanity is still as intact as possible, you know.
Very intriguing information. You know, Karis, I've seen rooms. Unfortunately, though, I have not seen, probably because I was just so terrified.
Mm-hmm.
I have not seen really a large ship in full focus, but I thought that information was very intriguing, and I know it appears elsewhere in literature as well, that concept of a large ship being larger than any city one would be here on Earth. That's fascinating. In the multi-level nature of that, that's interesting too.
Mm-hmm. The one that I saw, I saw one time sitting on Santa Monica Beach coming over the mountains where the Pacific Palisades are, which are a little bit north of the city where I live, just in Los Angeles. That one that I saw from the outside, I kind of saw what looked like condensation forming on it as it came over the mountains. That's the thing, I haven't seen the outside of a ship. I've seen clouds around it that were masking it, and I knew that there was one in there, which is a different thing than just being able to look up in the sky and see this thing. And then you kind of get to be able to recognize them. But that one was bigger than a mountain range.
Mm-hmm.
So that's way bigger than a city, bigger than a mountain range. And then the one that I've been in, the same one that I'm kind of used to going up into, it has hundreds of floors. And so some of them are living levels, some of them are working levels, and that's all I really know about it. I don't know what the rest of them are. Since there are hundreds, I'm assuming that there's probably more than just living and working levels. But I don't really know what it is. But I did know that there were three sets of stairs, three ways to travel. One was a spiral staircase that went around and was kind of decorative looking, which later I found out was a common feature in some of the ships, but I had no idea when I first saw it. The other is kind of an industrial staircase, the kind that are in hospitals and university buildings. And the third was this elevator. And I didn't go on the elevator, but when I saw it, I just knew that, and it was almost like I was getting a guided tour my first time. I was just realizing all these things. Or it also could have been memory. Maybe I'd been there before, and I just wasn't remembering until I saw the stuff. But you can the elevator and go hundreds of floors, and it would go in just a second. So, of course, if you're on floor 1 and you want to get to floor 237, then you're not going to want to take any type of stairwell, no matter how comfortable it is, and you're not going to want to take a normal-paced elevator. So that one would just kind of, like, send you from one place to the other.
Boy, that's fascinating. And, you know, Karis, what I thought was very interesting, too, was that a concept of while on board ship, on the main ship, as you would go by a certain area, there'd be a relay or a download of information, a relay of information. And to me, it seems a little bit similar to when sometimes you're at these museum exhibits where you're able to get recorders that will... give you all that information. But that's really
it was just knowledge rather than a verbal type of
telepathic knowledge. Boy, that sounds interesting. And now on board, there were many different types of beings. You also said that now you used that kind of the phrase earlier, so you were kind of hiding in the ship. I wouldn't call it that. I think you rightfully were very concerned because you found yourself sort of near the medical visitor section. That would have me terrified, that's for sure. All I know is either of those ships has had me terrified. But anyway, the fact is, I think you were just trying to reconnoiter the area and try to get as much information as possible. You were in an unknown situation. You wanted to be able to react well to it. Now, you note that there was constant scanning of the residents of that ship or the inhabitants of the ship. Does that sound Orwellian to you, or do you think that was just their civilization level? You also had one person try to help you avoid scanners.
Mm-hmm. Well, the difference is that I don't think that these scanners were going around all the time. I don't think that the feeling that I got when I saw it wasn't like, oh, everyone on the ship just constantly gets scanned and it's this forced utopia or dystopia type situation. That's not really how I felt at all. What I thought was that there was a scanner dispatch looking for me. That's what it felt like. Because I was out from where I was supposed to be. And so the way that I was going to be found was by this thing. And it was common enough that the people, I saw it scan a couple people, and it floated a couple feet higher than face level, so not that it, just above your head, I guess, so it wouldn't hit anyone. And it would go around, and it was kind of triangular shaped and kind of like flew around. I'm not sure if it was silent or if it made a noise, but it was about the size of, I don't know, maybe maybe a grapefruit, maybe a little bit bigger, maybe closer to basketball, but not a basketball. And I didn't see it do the actual scan. It's not like it's shown a light or anything, but I was aware that that's what it was doing, and I didn't want to be caught. And it was, It was more because I didn't know what would happen, and I knew that I wasn't where I was supposed to be because I had woken up in a medical area, although nothing was happening to me and no one was there when I woke up, which makes me think, okay, well, before I woke up, there's probably stuff going on that was wiped, you know. But it's hard to put a qualitative thing on that because I've also heard stories of people being abducted and having scary medical stuff done to them and then coming back and finding out that some crazy intense illness they have has gone into complete remission and things like that. So I don't even know that the medical scary stuff is always bad. And if you were to wake up in any type of a surgery, seeing and hearing and feeling things, even if you weren't feeling things, and I've heard that a lot of times it's not that people necessarily feel pain, although sometimes they do from the things that are happening, but it's just that you wake up and there are tubes in you and there are unfamiliar beings all around you and you're restrained. I mean, that's going to terrify anyone, regardless of whether there's any physical pain. But anyway, so I woke up in this area and I was kind of going to figure out what was going on. And, there was a scanner going around and it was almost like I was hearing an alarm go off, but it was in my mind. It was, and I knew that it was also for me, and it didn't seem like anyone else could hear it, so I figured that it was just to tell me to get back there. And there was a man down the hallway who looked human, and he looked at me and looked at the scanner, and then he kind of dropped to the floor and started crawling around on the floor, and I realized that he was telling me how to avoid the scanner, which, again, says if it was Orwellian, the scanner would be able to see you no matter how high you were. You know, if
good
it
point.
Was something that was, yeah, it would find you. But I think it was more like, the way I felt was that these particular beings that I happened to be interacting with at this point and the ones that I happen to have conscious memory of interacting with on a normal basis have evolved to a place where they understand the things that we're really getting at this point on Earth, all the presence, creating your own reality, this type of thing, all of that stuff, they get it. So they're there. That's where they spend their incarnation. So they're not stressed and they're not freaking out. And everyone is there because they want to be there because they know how to manifest lives that they want and they know how to be serene and be fully conscious and present, you know. So that's more what it felt like than, oh, no, we better do what we're supposed to because the thing's going to scan us. And that's the emotion of everyone that I saw. You know, that's kind of what I saw. But I saw that, and then I went into a couple living levels and saw different types of, different styles of furniture and living area and saw that, and was also kind of told that there were a bunch of different kinds, that pretty much any style of decor was there just because there was so much space. So he kind of choose which one you wanted. Yeah, and there was a lot of other stuff that happened. Like, someone ended up following me and then coming into the room where I was then hiding because their guy was going to catch me. And then when I came out, because eventually he just said, come out, I know you're there. And so I did, and I was terrified. And then I thought that I was going to either be killed or taken to a cell or something. And he was just very kind to me. And he said, you know, good job. You have a little more training to do, and then you can do some more stuff. And I was totally shocked. And then after he said that and we started walking away, it ended and I felt myself come back down into my own body. So that was the first major contact experience that I remembered clearly.
It was absolutely captivating to read. And you know, Karis, there's a reference here to a council. I've been hearing a lot of definitions of the word council, some positive, some very negative. When you hear the word council, trepidation or no...
No, because there are both that exist everywhere. You know, there are both that even exist on this earth. And so it depends on what type of council you're talking about. And I think there are a bunch of different types of councils, and I think that there are councils going for different reasons and with different goals in mind. So the one that I was to, or the more than one that I was to, I think it was kind of the same one, just on different occasions, was talking about disclosure. That's the one that I was at. That was the order of the day. They were discussing the process, I guess, or the stages where we are in them of disclosure on this planet. So that was the council I was in. But they seemed pretty highly evolved. I mean, not all of them were super sweet and nice, but they also weren't talking about hurting anyone. You know, it wasn't some of the stuff you hear about, like, mass extinctions and slaughters and things like that. It was nothing at all like that. It was more just, what is the process, where are we, and what are the most beneficial things to do for everyone so far as disclosure goes, letting people know and having it be a more common thing for the civilizations to interact with one another in a balanced way.
Well, that does sound reassuring. Now, Karis, am I also correct that have you encountered AS on board the ship as well, from ICAR that you might think of, or?
Actually, no, not that I can recall. But I'm not sure because a lot of it's foggy and there's a lot that I don't remember. So, I have met people before that felt strangely familiar who were also contactees. But I don't know if that's because I met them before on the ship, or if there are certain personality traits that feel familiar, or if it's because of a genetic thing that there are similar genes because we've both been tinkered with, or I don't know why, you know, what the reason is. So I'm not sure, I guess, the answer.
That's very intriguing. Thank you, Karis. And, you know, you mentioned the word fog there. And I was remembering in your book, it's a very powerful vignette where you noted with your husband while driving in the Santa Monica area, the appearance of an unusual fog as you drove towards your home, with the fog the most intense near your home. And boy, that struck a chord with me because, Karis, I remember once seeing a fog near my residence in another state. I felt great fear when I saw it. It seemed so, to me, anomalous and foreboding. And interestingly, too, Karina Sables has described this type of luminous fog. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, the fog is something that's common for experiences of this nature, and it's, I mean, around in tons of literature. You read lots of things written by contactees or written by people who study contact experiences and the fog. And why there's fog, I don't know. I mean, it could be that it's something that the ships kind of produce when they go through the sky is what a lot of people say, and I believe that to be true because I have seen something that looks like condensation on the ships. It can also be that it's easier to interact in the third dimension on ground level when everyone can't see you and would freak out. So if you have a thick fog, then you can kind of choose who you're going to interact with. It could be a lot of reasons, but I will tell you that when I saw the fog at our house, I was afraid, and I was very afraid. And so that, to me, leads to the assumption that all my experiences have not necessarily been positive, but the ones that I can remember have been, and the ones that I have ongoing and most conscious have been. But I think that it's probably been both, and I don't think that it's the same groups. Like, I don't think that the same ones that I remember in a positive way are the ones that I am afraid of. I think that afraid of when I think there's about to be an interaction. I think that there are a lot of different groups, just like there are different groups of people with different goals in mind. And it just, part of it we're totally not in control of, you know, it seems, because people get taken who have no idea what's going on. But I also do think that to some extent you can call certain things in by what you think about and what you search. And I think people who, for instance, research lots of scary abductions and that fear side of it are possibly, I mean, it's a theory, but more likely to then be on that resonance so that they invite that type of experience. Whereas people who are very into, like, angelic literature and, you know, angelic realm stuff will have more positive experiences. Not necessarily just angels, but that's just an example. I don't know that that's necessarily always true, and there's a lot that I don't know. I mean, I certainly don't know everything, and sometimes I feel like, well, like a lot of people say, the more I find out, the less I feel like I know all the time. So it's just kind of sharing the little bit that I have experienced and that I do think I'm pretty sure about with people who have experienced less, to give them some type of footing to make them feel more informed, you know, about what's going on.
Absolutely, and you know, the information is very, very interesting. To me, it's vital information, and you know, you are contributing major data to the field. That's very important. It's, you know, it's similar to November Hansen's great title of her wonderful book, The Mosaic of the Extraterrestrial Experience. It really is key data being placed in a wonderful resource for information that's very important to an important field. And, you know, Karis, I was intrigued, too, by the indication during your visualizations and also encounters of that aspect of becoming even more fully human as one develops the intelligence and also the definition of star seeds. If I could just quickly define it, one, star seeds as being those whose souls originated not initially from Earth but elsewhere in the universe or multiverses, and two, or those whose genetic makeup received contributions from alien sources, perhaps in vitro. Yes. Interesting.
Yes, I think that a lot of times it's a combination of the two, the more I find out. It's occurred to me through, I mean, you know, those of us who experience things like that, this often call them downloads. You know, it's like this huge packet of information that just arrives in your head, and then you start unpacking it and understanding it. And one of the ones that I've recently had, and that will probably go into the that I write, is about DNA and DNA modification and souls. And it's the best way I can describe it at my current level of understanding is that not only do we incarnate in a bunch of different types of bodies, but, I mean, we as, you know, creatures, beings, consciousness, but it's also true that we choose bodies that our souls can fit into. So that's why, for instance, there are certain starseed characteristics that aren't always true across the board, but that are often true, that you see with starseeded people, physical things, because for a certain type of soul, a certain kind of shape of soul, if you will, because our DNA are just these protein strands that are held together by energy flowing. So if your energy looks a certain way or kind of is used to flowing in a certain way, then it would make sense that the body that you live in will have these characteristics that make it easier for you to fit. And that's also sometimes when people become more spiritually aware or just purely healthy. I know that this happens a lot when people, for instance, go on a raw food diet, if they're called to do that, which everyone's not necessarily supposed to do, but those who are notice things like structure shifting, their features changing, things like that, and becoming more symmetrical, often more what our culture or our, I guess the world would probably call, quote, like beautiful, just because they're more symmetrical and they're more healthy looking, not having to do with like a fashion type thing. But also, you know, your bones get stronger a lot. When I went on a raw food diet for a while, my teeth got wider, my eyes became more brightly iridescent, my skin cleared, and my body shape changed a little bit to become more elongated. And that type of thing can happen. Now, when we're talking about becoming more fully human, and in the books that I write, I end up calling it kind of human with a capital H, or divine human, rather than, I don't want to say animalistic human, but essentially the thing closer to the devolved human that we have in our Cro-Magnon history type thing. Although, you know, some people say the Cro-Magnons were super intelligent and did a lot of things, so I don't really know. But essentially, we're not done evolving, right? Nothing ever is. So the capital H human or the divine human would be what we're evolving into, which is essentially the same thing, non-coincidentally, I'll say, is what all of the spiritual traditions are trying to tell us to do. You know, because at the heart of the spiritual traditions, it's always the same idea, you know, do unto others as you would have do unto you. Try to send out positive ripples, harm, and be present and be grateful and, you know, commune with the one major consciousness that we're all offshoots of. So it's kind of the same thing. And when someone does that, then from what I've learned, they become more human, a more divine human, capital H, which is the point of this race, as I understand it. What we're doing is becoming kind of creators. So that kind of ties in cosmology, I guess, and certain prophecies and things like that, and certain people like the Christ type, was what I'm looking for, kind of avatar thing that's come through in so many different bodies and in so many different ways, and that they're saying now is arising again. And the way that I think it's arising is that Christ and the others like him were they just understood they were connected to what we're supposed to be. And so now with the second coming or whatever, the arising, it's just because more people are realizing how to do that. It's not going to be one person coming back and doing the same thing again. It's going to be everyone going up to that state, not one specific person. Because even still, when you say Christ, it's not someone's name. It's more like a station or a type of consciousness, I feel like.
Well, it's an interesting viewpoint, and I do note that, let me know if I'm correct here, that in your experience development paradigm, you note the key importance transformative power, the transformative power of love, pardon me, and also the importance of synchronicity and choice.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, as I understand it, on our evolutionary level that we're currently on, we're emerging from the brain level to the heart level, and the brain level was very important. It was the next stage in our evolution from before the brain level, and the brain level, we've tried to get out of it a couple of times, but the problem with getting out of it is you can also blast yourself down to not very many if you do the wrong stuff, like the evidence they're now finding of atomic blasts from centuries ago and maybe even millennia ago. Mm-hmm. And that's the stuff that, like, Von Däniken and Tsoukalos and those kind of guys talk about. But as I understand it, the logic brain time was very important. It was an important step in evolution. But now we're moving into a heart-centered awareness because we did have the brain stuff. Like, logic is important. It's an important part. But now the step past it is to be led by the heart, which is led by feelings of inspiration and understanding more than needing to pick things apart and kind of dissect them in a logical way. Although there's a place for that, but it's not how to make every single decision in life, and actually it's corrosive. And so the heart works in things like synchronicity and inspiration. And one thing that's become very clear to me, and I'm sure to others who sort of communicated with in funny ways, like songs on the radio and stuff like that, is that from what I understand, the beings that I interact with, who are very heart-centered beings and who are almost always instructing me on how to use the heart properly as an intelligence tool, also work very deeply in synchronicity. Like, rather than say an example, and I don't even think this is mine. I think I read this somewhere, heard this somewhere, but I don't remember where. If you're going to go on a trip, rather than say, okay, this is my flight, this is what I'm going to do, planning out the itinerary, you make an intention and you say, okay, I'm going to go on this trip, and you imagine it up, and then expect for things to fall into place, and they do, rather than needing to go kind of the deductive route. Mm-hmm. The reverse deductive route to figure it out. You know what I mean?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, and so that's it. I mean, as being someone who sometimes tries to logically hammer things into place and sometimes can control my intentions enough to make things happen, that's a lot easier of a way to do it. It sure does seem like a step upward. It seems a lot easier and more pleasant to work through synchronicity and stuff than through logical forcing puzzle pieces together, you know?
Thank you. No, that's very well explained. Karis, this also was new to me. It floored me a bit. I found it very intriguing. Now, this is the information as well that really intrigued me. That was, Karis, as I remember it, in field research, there frequently is the question of whether grays lack emotions and seek to have emotions as do humans. But now in your second book, Instruction of a Star Seed, there is an indication that your rhythm teacher, teaching the rhythm of the cosmos, of humans, was indicating that emotions can help you focus and strengthen, intensify your work.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. And there's a lot of research, well, not necessarily research, I don't really know what to call it, but tons of literature about emotions and emotional focus and what emotions are and whether they're something to be ignored or not and whether they're something to be controlled or not and how to control them and why to control them, things like that. But from what I've experienced, my rhythm teacher, who is what you would call a gray, although he's not one of the small ones, like they're the ones that are around 3 feet tall who usually have a lot to do with things like abductions, and he's not one of those, although I have interacted with one of those that did seem to have emotion. He's a tall one, and his skin is tan. But he has incredible emotions, but he's in extreme control of them. He's very, I like to call it just zenned out. You know, he's very serene, and it's because, it's obviously not because he was born that way, though. When I deal with him, it's because he's mastered that. And it's kind of the same with spiritual teachers you'll even meet on this planet. A lot of times they have a very serene way about them because they've practiced it.
Because of the training. Continue right on. Someone's knocking at the door, but I'll be right back. Please continue on. It's a very interesting train of thought there.
Okay. I'm trying to remember what I was talking about. Okay, about emotion. Yes, I've noticed that he's very emotionally aware, and although he's aware of different emotions, and especially mine, because a lot of times when I talk to him, I'm not necessarily in the best emotional place. I might be feeling whatever. And so one of the things that I found, and especially to tell this to other people who have experiences.
I guess we just have some friends arrive, but what's that, please?
Oh, yeah, I was talking about people who've had experiences with what they think might be extraterrestrials, and one of the things that I can say about mine, because I sometimes have very strong emotions, like sometimes I'll be having a temper tantrum when I'm communicating, I'll be really upset about something, and it's kind of a gentle rebuking that will happen. And I was actually just talking to someone about a week ago who's starting to have experiences like this, and he was describing too how he was interacting with what seemed like a spirit guide, and it could have been, or it could have been extraterrestrial, I'm not sure which it was, but how they'll rebuke you, and they'll say, you know, no, this is your fault, and you're not doing the thing that you could be doing. Sure, what's that?
Please pardon me, and did I give you a chance there to finish your sentence? I'm so sorry.
Okay, yeah, no, not quite, but I'm glad that you're back, because I was just getting to say how, what's that?
Oh, go right ahead.
Okay, how the rebuking will be done, and it'll say, well, actually, no, this fight is your fault, or whatever, but it will be done with so much love and no judgment. Mm-hmm. And that's something that kind of happens across the board with these ones that I interact with, because they'll tell me when I'm being a brat, and they'll tell me when it is my fault, or, you know, but it's done without any anger and without any, so there you have, again, that it's not that they're emotionless, but it's that they're in control of their emotions, and that I think it's kind of like, sometimes I feel like I'm in a child position, and like I'm being taught and kind of, you know, in school, and so it's like, you know, like any teacher will tell you, you can't let the kids who you teach determine your emotions, because that's just a recipe for disaster. You know, you can't get angry when they don't understand a lesson. So that's kind of what it feels like a lot of times, although I have felt him very excited in a good way a couple of times, and it always shocked me when it happened, when something good was going on with me, or when I was about to have some great big breakthrough, I would kind of plug in and then feel him really excited, like really happy and kind of jittery, and I was always like, this only happened maybe two or three times, and I'm always like, whoa, something is going on. If this energetic and emotional when usually he's so serene. But that just goes to say that, yeah, there's tons of emotion there. It's just also emotional control, too, which is, I think, why some people might say that they don't have any emotion.
Boy, thank you. That was a great explanation. That really helped my understanding there. And now, Karis, you were given some really interesting information on that. You were told that all creatures are children of the light, I guess all sentient beings, regardless of species type. And I guess, too, from your reading, you would say that there is other type of intelligence as well, plant, another type of just kind of a spirit. I was going to say, like the Hebrew term nefesh, if that's the correct one. Now, share us on this idea of the different species being children of light. Despite the fact that they retain their own species type, is it that they're all in sort of an evolutionary path, or?
Well, I would expect that. You know, I mean, the way that we understand things like development to go, and even spiritual evolution, eventually you understand more than you did before, and it would make sense that since our universe is, I mean, infinitely old, we talk about a Big Bang, but we don't really know when it happened or how it happened, or and so before the Big Bang there was something happening, you know, then it would make sense that there are species that are all along the stages of evolution, you know, and the one that we happen to be at seems that we're moving from brain into heart intelligence, and that we're about to become more entrenched in the civilizations around us too. I kind of see it like being on an island, like we're kind of the indigenous people on the island, and we just assume, and the island is Earth and the ocean is space, and we just assume that there's no one else across the ocean, which I think is kind of ridiculous, and assume that we're the only ones, and now it's kind of the time where more of us are, where the ones from across the ocean are communicating with more and more of us and saying, well, you know, you're actually not alone, and now we can communicate with you because you've reached a spot in your evolution that is, that makes it beneficial for everyone to communicate. And that's a theory. You know, it's not something that I'm going to say is dogma. It's just what I think is happening. So.
Well, those sound rather like very intriguing concepts there, and well worth consideration. And, you know, Karis, too, I also found very interesting, that concept or observation that you came to realize that the vision can be used as a tool, and that what is absorbed through the eye carries the imprint of that scene, and that there could be a reverse impact as well on the object, which had its image fall on the retina and then into the brain, into the brain's awareness. I don't think I really well described that. I hope you understand what I'm saying.
Yes, yes, I do. it came in one of those downloads one day. I was driving to the airport, and I'm looking at this landscape as in Pennsylvania. And there's a lot of beautiful land in Pennsylvania, so I was going across all this farmland and noticing how I was crossing these fields. And I am an empath, and there are lots and lots of empaths out there, and there are different kinds of empaths. And some of them can, for instance, just tell what other people are feeling, but the way that mine works is that I feel what other people are feeling, like it's mine, and sometimes that can even be a handicap, especially before I realized what it was and just had to, like, sleep for hours after Christmas shopping and not know why. But anyway, so I can also sometimes do that with plants and kind of feel my way through what's going on because it's all consciousness. So I'm going over the roads and seeing that, you know, there are a lot of fields and there's some fertilizer and stuff, but and fertilizer and pesticides and things that kind of hurt the way. There is also all this beautiful flora everywhere, and so appreciating it. And then I realized that when the photons that had bounced off of the flora, like the forest and the grass and stuff that I was looking at, when those photons bounced off of that, so then they could be reflected into my eyes through my pupils and then melt on the back of my retina to then be absorbed as information and travel to the brain, they carried information. So if something's going to bounce off a leaf, if a photon's going to bounce off a leaf and then come into my brain, it's going to carry an impression of that leaf because it's a never-ending stream. So it's kind of like a river flowing from this to that. But since it's information just doesn't have a one-way flow. So then I understood that things could go back the other way and say you're, for instance, flying over a huge swath of land. You can look down and give a beneficial intention to that, and everything you can touch with your eyes will benefit from that beneficial intention. And it felt like technology or science or something to me. And the interesting thing was, a few days later, I found some type of, actually me, who I told about this experience, sent me some new TED Talk or something like that that was essentially about the same thing that I had no idea had ever been studied in a scientific way. So it just goes to show, you know, they say there's the time for ideas, that ideas don't belong to any one person, that we're all kind of accessing this data bank, and things like that make me believe that theory.
Thank you for that explanation. And, you know, Karis, that's fascinating. Also, as I'll be seeing here, we have about a minute or so left, and I was going to ask you just one final question, and that would be, in your research and study of these beings, and also the encounters, are you noting here a strong interdimensionality factor?
Yes, that's what it seems like. I mean, yes, the answer to that is yes, absolutely. Yes, with exclamation points, that is what I think it is. It's interdimensional, transdimensional. Yeah, and that's why I think people who have, like, what's called in old lore, like, the second sight, or who can see ghosts or disembodied spirits or whatever, see these things easier too, because it's a different dimension that you're looking into.
Thank you very much. No, that's very, very intriguing, and I found this entire interview to be one that was very informative, and I very much appreciate all the data and your research findings. Now, Karis, you're writing a book, correct? I definitely will be reading that right away.
Mm-hmm. Oh, thank you, Therese, and thank you for having me on. This is great.
Thank you. I've appreciated this discussion very much as well. Now, Karis, I hope you'll be a return visitor, a return guest in the very near future, and I hope, too, to see you invited to several conferences. You certainly have a great deal to contribute.
No, that would be fun. I love going. I love interacting with others on a personal basis. Usually it's on the Internet, so it's nice in person, too.
No, exactly. And now, Karis, again, I'd like to mention to our audience your excellent websites, journalofastarseed.com and instructionofastarseed.com, and our excellent books, Journal of a Starseed and Instruction of a Starseed. And also, to remind the audience that Karis also is an excellent holistic consultant, a speaker, healer, expert at Reiki, really a very multi-talented, or as I say, my generation, a true Renaissance type, with a great deal of advanced information on several subjects, a very well-learned individual. And, well, Karis, hope you'll be back very, very soon. Thank you again.
And, thank you.
And also, great weekend to everyone. Thanks for joining us this evening. Good night, all. Take care.
Thanks for joining us this evening for the discussion on A Global Focus with guest Karis Brown-Malloy. We wish everyone a great weekend.
To take a hold of and to start using. You see, with all of the doom and gloom and all the predictions of things that might happen, the most powerful prediction that I could make and present to you, it was a prediction that if you learn how to manage the energy that runs through you and use this creative ability, this creative force, really, then imagine what you want the future to be and then create it. You aren't meant to be here simply as bystanders, but there are so many bystanders walking the earth right now. I call them the walking dead. They're asleep. But you, obviously, listening to this,